Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
So, Tim, thanks for being here, by the way. Thanks for agreeing to, join me today. And it's
thank you for inviting me. Now
we get to talk. Now you and I get to talk.
Yeah. Okay,
so this is not quite the Marvin Gaye, the Marvin Gaye that you and I know. Let's talk about Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, the original.
Yeah. And I wish we had played the original because I'll tell you stories about it what it means to me. And maybe, you know, the music itself, Marvin Gaye and his influence. I think, firstly, if one goes back to when the song was recorded, right, and you check the history of the world at that time, what was going on, and how an artist was very popular, as much as so-called R&B, but he was like popular, pop artist of the time, could take social issues and put them into music that conscientized young people across the world without being a politician himself. You know, it's like people who could read the room and then say, I like all this music that we can dance to, singing about love, and it's very important that we sing about that, but take a social issue and then turn it into music. I regard it as actually his best album of all time. Easily, I would even suggest to me personally, as a fan, that that's one of the best albums of my lifetime.
Yeah.
I only got to know it years later. It was recorded in 1971. When I read about it, it was controversial. But in the late 70s, when you listen to this song and then you got to understand what was going on in the United States, the Vietnam War and other social problems, the civil rights movement, that he was articulating the concerns of his age and did it in such a way that is enjoyable.
Yeah.
You know, it's a painful music, conscientizing music, but when you listen to the song, it really touches you somewhere. And has got the album itself has got touches of spiritual music in it.
Yeah. Music is big for you. I mean, it's important.
Absolutely.
To you, right?
Very, 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 very much so.
So maybe a lot of people don't know that you started working as a music compiler. Were you a compiler?
I was.
Sort of.
I was a program. Top 40. What do they call them? Program assistant, I think.
At 702.
At 702,
It's very inception while it was in
Harangua
at the top of the hill there.
So, you know, when music had to come, we had to put it together, compile it. I had to put it on 8-track cassettes at the time. Or put it on the quarter-inch tapes and edit what needed to be edited and so on, and preparing it for the on-air personnel at the time. So music, you know, has been very much part of my life.
That was early days of 702.
Yeah. But by then, if I have to say so, I already owned this album. So I had already bought the album. So, very, very important possession of mine. And the relationship that I have with the album, I love it.
Do you remember how you got the album?
Oh, well, I went to one of my favorite pastimes then was to go and buy music in town, you know, go to Maraba Stad to buy music. I had a friend who actually got me into radio, who was working. I was not working, waiting to go to university at the time. And then he would give me money and say, you know what, whilst you hanging around doing nothing, go buy, check music for me. And then he'd give me money for around 10 albums. Say, buy 10 albums. Two are yours.
Wow.
You choose what you want for yourself, and you choose what you think I should get. So I'd say, but how do you know I'm going to buy myself better music and then give you, let's call it, rubbish music? He said, no, I trust you. I know you will deal with me fairly. So whenever I came back with those albums, he'll say, okay, take yours then, and then I'll take my 8 albums. So we will listen, and the ones that I like the most, from his own observation, he says, now you seem to like this album more, so it's yours. That's how I started collecting music.
So there are some who don't know the 702 as a music station.
Yes.
Because that's where this whole thing
came. It was called Channel 702, Rainbow of Sound.
Yes. Medium Wave.
Yes.
On Medium Wave.
Exactly.
And just let's talk about that era. I mean, Stan Katz's era, Kwaki 2 Bull.
Yeah.
Those were greats. I mean, those were massive people. When you were in that building at the time before you went on the mic, I mean, how did you reflect on the people in the room that you were working with?
You know, Cockatoo, most of them worked in Joburg, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then a few would come to Harankua. One of them was Jerry Cohen, the brother to Boogie Harry Cohen, who was an on-air person. And now and again, I'll travel with him to work anyway, because he drove past my home. But by the time I joined 702, Cockatoo Bull was a big person coming from Radio SR already. So he was the person I looked up to.
Yes.
You know, in terms of how he put music together and then how he presented the music. What is the word now? He had, is it swag?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he had
lots
the whole
of swag.
He had the whole story put together, you know. And of course, Stan Kedz was a very humorous guy, very entertaining. Mm. We're listening to him. Mm. But one of my responsibilities or duties was to transcribe the American Top 40, Casey Kasem, mm-hmm. into the quarter inches that I spoke about, or imported albums. Mm. So, you know, I was listening to a lot of programming, including that came from the United States, and of course with the music that was there, enjoying the music, it was wonderful.
Mm. I'm going to take a little break as we continue playing some of your music, and we'll talk a little bit about that. The next one, I think, is Silky Soul. So we continue to play some of your favorite music. Tim Mudisa is my guest, and he's in studio with us. So Leo, pick the Silky Soul.
So, yeah. Well. If you listen to the song, he's actually paying tribute to Marvin Gaye.
Yes.
In that song. Yes. So, you know, that's the beauty of it. Yeah. And it's a pity we didn't play the original. But in the Silky Silky Soul song, you can hear the influence of Marvin Gaye on Frankie Beverly. And of course, we know what happened with Frankie Beverly and Maze, that they went on to be big. Mm. Again, going back to the earlier discussion on Todd Machikiza, you know, there are individuals who touch other individuals in ways that are difficult to imagine over time. But I'm pleased that Frankie Beverly and Maze paid tribute to Marvin Gaye in this manner.
No, absolutely. So when you look at your career, I think you've interviewed every single president. Have you interviewed Ramaphosa yet?
Not as president, no.
Not as president.
Not as president.
So maybe in one word, what did you make of Thabo Mbeki?
I think he still is a remarkable human being, but he's not in charge now. So let's talk about him in the context of the past. I was very privileged, from my personal point of view, to interview him many, many times.
Yes,
probably more than any of the leaders, political leaders we've had in South Africa. And one thing I can say about him is that he, to me at least, came across as a person with a clearly thought through plan. Mm-hmm. And knew or had ideas of how it needed to be executed, mm-hmm. and also knew how to mobilize resources mm-hmm. to support his ideas, and also promoted his ideas anyway. If you remember the ANC weekly newsletter, he would write it and it would cause controversy and people would speak to what he's saying in his articles. But I'll go back to, I think, the adoption of the Constitution then, when he gave the I'm an African speech. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's any speech that's ever been written and given in that way, at least in the modern times, political times of South Africa. But again, I say, to my mind, he had foresight because he had a clearly defined agenda. He mentioned what it was. There was empowerment on one side and transformation in the context of South Africa, and policies followed that supported that vision. And then there was the African Renaissance element, which translated into NEPAD and other programs. Mm. So, you know, in the interactions with him, I definitely learned a lot. Mm. One personal story that I can tell, in one conversation, not interview, when he was still deputy president, and he complained or raised the issue about how the media was covering his trip to China then, when it was not the thing to do.
Yes.
And South Africa was moving away from relationships with Taiwan and then getting closer to the People's Republic of China. And then they blamed him to be in cahoots with people who were violating human rights and so on. Mm-hmm. And then I did not understand the story, the politics behind it. And he said, you must watch what's going on in China. China is going to become a superpower like you cannot believe. Those people have got a program, and that program is going to sweep the world. By then, China was still, you know, a sort of backward country, if I may say so. That's when both Sinyaka and others would sing the song, Kiri Fong Kong, would regulate Kira Asai, and what. Because things that came from China were regarded as cheap
inferior
and so on. But look at what has happened.
Yeah.
So to me, he predicted something that I saw happen, and he tried certain things which were taking the country somewhere, because, you know, the confidence levels in the country in terms of, as ordinary folk were talking the economy, for God's sake, were discussing inflation rate, you know, wherever you went, people were talking about how things should be, how the economy, much as we were not trained in economics and so forth. So it was, I think he's a wonderful man, because you discuss any idea with him, books, and it was very important that you prepare when you going to interview, because he'll tell you, he'll call you out and say, you know, you didn't put your work together here, you're just clutching at straws and you're asking me questions based on hearsay. So I personally appreciated having to prepare talking to him.
We've got a call here for you. Dolly is calling from Soweto. Dolly, good evening and welcome.
Hi, Pinza.
Hi, Dolly.
How are you, my darling?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, today I'm revealing my name. The other time, the first time I called, I didn't want to reveal my name.
Okay.
My name is Dolly.
Okay. Welcome.
Hey, Pimelo. You're sitting with the giant there in the studio tonight.
Yeah.
Ntate Modise, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you, how's Dolly?
I'm good, gentlemen.
Yeah, bo.
Ntate Modise, I just want to give you your flowers while you're still around.
Hey.
The impact that you did in my children's lives. You know, they grew up listening to you when you were doing your journals.
Wow.
You know, one of them ended up in One Day Leader. There in TV, she was leader number 4. Zanele.
Yes.
That's my daughter.
Okay.
They are all named Mr. Modise.
No, Kalibuwa, thanks.
No, I didn't want them to watch TV.
Yeah.
I taught them when they were still schooling that you must listen. You must listen to everything that's happening around your country. That way you'll go somewhere. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
I've been wondering where have you disappeared to. Thank you so much, Ntate Modise, and your music taste, eh?
It does hit. I've got another one, a voice note for you.
Hi, Pumelo. Thank you so much to bring Tim Modise more Kaya FM. I used to listen to him around 2001, 2002 or 1999, somewhere there. I used to work more run back at night. I used to listen to Tim Modise, essentially Mr. Michael Mondane. I want to ask him, where is Michael Mondane? So much. We miss Tim Modise. Tim Modise must come back to radio. Hey, Tati Tim Modise, we want you back.
No, I get you, and thanks very much for the compliment. Bra Mike is still around, and we did some interesting work together then, when we thought, you know, I still hold the view anyway that we should have had some campaigns, you know, educational campaigns of sorts, public education, that, you know, we fought for change, to bring about change in South Africa in order to determine our destiny as a people. But I think we missed one point. We just said we want to replace apartheid with a new setup, but never changed our minds, you know, our software on how you take responsibility, because destiny does not come by itself. It comes out of deliberate action, and deliberate action requires you to think in a certain way. And that's why sometimes we talk about having a struggle against something as much as this is our country, this is our government, this is our constitution, but we are struggling against something. So my view anyway, is when you are saying you're against something, you are suggesting you don't go along with your own thing. So how are you going to put it together in such a way that it works for you? If you are opposed to it, I'm not sure. I'm still battling to make sense of that. But I'm sure there are people who hold a different view can help me navigate my way through where we are.
Timothy says, my guest, let me take a quick break. I see you, George. I'll be back with you in a short while, and I'll be taking more of your voice notes as well and more of our conversation with Timothy. The music of Sibongile Khumalo, Untold Story. Now, I mean, who needs to introduce Sibongile Khumalo? Everybody knows
exactly
the talent that is Sibongile Khumalo.
Exactly.
What a gift.
Mm-hmm. And a remarkable human being, bless her soul. Mm. I love the song. I loved it, and it used to be sort of, I don't know what the word is, in-house joke or whatever. And whenever I met with her, and then I was going to interview, she said, "Don't tell me you're going to play my song again."
And of course you would have
I
to
will
do that.
Play that
of
song.
Course you're going to have to do that.
So I love you as my sister, but I love this song more. But it's thanks to you that I love the song.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Always enjoyed it.
You know, you, I mean, there isn't a radio station here that I can name in the country that you have not worked for the new ones. You've also worked at the BBC and so on. And, you know, somebody else earlier on was, Sis Dolly was saying, you know, you had such an impact, lots of awards, not necessarily just in broadcasting.
Yeah.
But for me, what I think is interesting, and the question to you is, what was your why?
I think I love that question. It gives me time to say something which maybe people ask me in different ways, but I've not been able to answer the question. That, you know, when we do this kind of work, people enjoy what you do, especially then when we played music and you become popular. And sometimes you may end up being popular for popularity's sake, and that's about it. Mm. So to me, what was key was, what are you going to do with this popularity thing? People listen to you guys on Metro. They love what you do. But these are people with so many everyday struggles. They have to catch taxis, public transport, going home. They've got higher purchase problems, loans, this, health, you name it. And they listen to us. But let's give them more content beyond the entertainment. They've come for the entertainment. It's great. But what if you were to elevate their understanding and have empathy with their lives? That's where I started with the talk programs, where I said we cannot discuss politics then, but we can always discuss our lives. Mm. And our lives matter anyway. And you know, somebody's in a taxi or whatever transport listening to you, and then you give a word of advice here, or you bring an expert who can deal or sensitize them, direct them on how to deal with whatever they are battling with. And from then it evolved to things like nation building talks with both at the agri cluster, and then ultimately the politics, and more or less at the right time, so to speak. Because when some of the elders were being released from Robben Island, a person like Dr. Govan Mbeki, and after him, Walter Sisulu, Ahmed Kathrada, they came to my show. Mm. There was a platform that we had already created. And to me, that was very important. Otherwise, we would have not known about them if we did not create such platforms. And of course, what happened post was the release of Madiba, talks at World Trade Center, interviews with Chris Hani, the late Chris Hani, a hero to so many of us, and the unrest that was sweeping Gauteng at the time, the trauma that communities were going through, especially on the East Rand and the Vaal area, you know. And so people could talk about those things, and that was the point for me, that take the work that you guys do, and as popular as you are, let it belong to the people so that they can breathe, connect, and have the discussions that over time evolved. And today we are here.
Yeah.
So I'm pleased.
one of the privileges that comes with being on a platform like this, you would know this, is sometimes you've just spoken about some of the examples. You would witness history yourself.
Yeah.
But not only just witness history, but literally engage with it directly.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how you're engaging with how the world is playing itself out right now. The kind of, you know, what we're seeing in Israel, in Gaza, in Lebanon now, in the U.S., where it's, we are watching probably a genocide taking place right before our eyes.
Yeah.
How are you distilling that in your mind?
Majority of human beings are not in charge of anything, and decisions are taken by big people elsewhere. For instance, declaration of war here, there, and then it's other people's children who get sent to those wars to fight them. Mm. Now, those who would be the parents or would be the participants in actual combat of war would not have had a say of whether to go to war or not. And that's very sad. Mm. So the similar situation, and talking about that part of the Middle East, it's very sad that the wars, the conflicts continue. I mean, it was Gaza for some time and the Gaza Strip, and then it moved a little bit to the West Bank, and now it's in the south of Lebanon. And then you ask yourself, there are supposedly governments everywhere in different countries of the Middle East. Mm. What makes it difficult for them to come together and settle the score, come up with some constructive ideas of how to deal with the problem? We do have the United Nations. It's been there for how long? Almost 70 years now, if not longer. And then you ask yourself, why is it so impossible for the leaders of the world to sort out problems like the conflict that we see there? Mm. And there are, of course, the financial interests on one side, but the devastation of the people continues. And there's, of course, history, which nobody wants to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. They don't go back to say, how did we create the mess? Mm. Because the mess was created at some point. Mm. And why are so many people with power fatalistic in their approach to problems? Mm. To me, that's a very disappointing thing, because it does not seem to improve. We can go back to modern history and the different conflicts that came about. I remember the Iraq War, for instance, where there was talk of weapons of mass destruction.
Yes.
Not being in the United States, being here in South Africa, I could tell from a distance that that's not true.
Yeah.
And we're very privileged to go out of our way to find the people who were helping us make sense of the war that was taking place in Iraq. And after everything had happened, the devastation of Iraq and people's futures being destroyed and other wars, the same government turned around in the United States and said, sorry, there were no weapons of mass destruction. So it's unfortunate. I mean, I feel sorry for the people of Palestine to be attacked in this manner. In the same breath, I feel sorry for the Israelis, because they also live in fear, some of them, and then there's resentment in the world against the Israelis. Mm. And in time, I'm imagining, if you are involved in war, it costs a lot of money, besides the human suffering that is the consequence. But it impacts on the economy of all those areas, right? Mm. Who's going to fix it when everything is over? Mm. Who's going to repair or mend the relationships between ordinary folk who come from the Palestinian side, who come from the Israeli side? No one will be there, and they will not have been the people who were responsible for that decision. So, and then you check around the world, the big people of the world, you don't see any agency, you know, from their side. And of course, it's not the only place. It's stuff that's going on in Ukraine, stuff
Congo,
on the continent,
Sudan.
Stuff that's going on. And then you say, but what is this function of? Is this function of poor leadership? Is it function of human hatred for one another? Is it a function of bigotry? I don't know, but it's unfortunate and tragic.
We've got Salvation on the line from Tembisa. Hello, Salvation.
Hi, Pumelo. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome, man. Welcome.
I'm great. Thank you so much. And I love the program. And today, for the fact that you're also hosting one of my ever favorite broadcaster, Pi Excellency, Bratim Modise, I've got one or two questions, Bratim. Pimelo. So I wanted to ask him, I've been working on community radio station for quite some time myself, and I wanted to find out from Brad Tim, who has been his childhood mentor, or who mentored him in broadcasting space or even on television. Because I remember when I was growing up, I used to watch him when he was interviewing Barack Obama. I remember
Obama, but anyway, the imagination is let it run as wild as it can. But
yeah, absolutely. It slipped my mind. But I think that, but you've been there in the industry for quite some time. Yeah. I just want to know who has been your mentor, Brad Tim, because I looked up to you, people like you. And then secondly, what is your view when it comes to the evolving of radio versus, if you like to say, versus the podcast, because podcast is gaining momentum now. I think we'll pick it there right now, Pimelo.
No, thanks very much, Salvation. Let me be quick. I know you've got to end now.
Absolutely.
I will single out more my boss, who was very empowering, Prokos Khadeb. You know, I'm pleased that we still have
SABC Metro.
Yeah, we still have a good relationship up to now. You know, I spent a weekend with him a few months back, and it was great to catch up.
Yeah.
If there's one person that I think had a big impact, was his supportive nature and encouraging way. You know, as much as radio stations have formats and this and the other, whenever I push the envelope a little bit, when I'd be music or whatever, he would just take me to the side and say, "Hey, Mutise, oh, please, man, take it easy here and there," whilst defending me elsewhere, with those who would be opposed to it. So I really valued that. And I think he was a marvelous boss, not only to me, but to many other people. If you could have a boss like that, you'd be very privileged. And comments on podcasts and the way media operates now, of course, it's devolving, you know, and in time, in the United States, the impact is already felt. There's one example, two examples. Well, I can mention Joe Rogan, who's very popular with podcasts, and he's bigger than the networks themselves. But Tucker Carlson is a good example for me, because he resigned from Fox, was it last year? Or he was actually dismissed from Fox, and then he went on his own and interviewed so many people, big people, because they also listen to the media, the radio stations, television, and they decide who they want to talk to. They are also paying attention. So he spoke to former president of the U.S., Donald Trump, was given an interview by Vladimir, President Putin of Russia. Yes. Today, the audience of Tucker Carlson, he actually even goes to basketball arenas, you know, to hold talks there and so on. But the podcast that he does, he even interviewed Elon Musk. One of the podcasts, or some of them rather, were 10 times more, or generated 10 times more audiences than his regular shows on Fox News. So that tells you something. When he was on Fox, at best, he would have about 3 million people watching his shows. Now, one of the podcasts, I think, went up to 100 million views. So it tells you. People are beginning to follow people more than follow stations. And I think we're going that direction in South Africa. In recent times, there are individuals in the podcast space who have got their own following, and people tend to know them more than they probably know some of the channels. And I say this respectfully. So people are spoiled for choice. It's just getting accustomed to the delivery of the content. And the more this penetration of the smartphones and people knowing that they can consume media via smartphones, the more we're going to see the fragmentation happen in the media space.
We spoke earlier about what was your why then. What gets you out of bed now?
I'm still interested, and I'm thankful for that. And here and there, I'm still called upon to do certain things. I do host my own talks.
Yes.
When I reach out to people to invite them to be in conversation with me, they look forward to it, and I appreciate it. I appreciate that. I do care about the developments in the country a lot. Yeah. And I am keen to participate in conversations about how we can make our country work and how to make the country work for all of us, you know, not work on its own. Mm. It saddens me to see many young people without economic opportunities, given where we come from. Mm. And the whole point of struggle and, you know, trying to end apartheid by so many people who sacrificed, some you spoke about, who, whose remains were repatriated this week. I don't think it was just a struggle for fun so that we can vote and put people in power here and there. It was so that people can be empowered. But to read and hear of statistics of 60% of people below the age of 35 not partaking in the economic system, but being useful when it's time to vote, it's very sad. Because you know, the developmental years of every human being are very important because that's when you get to know who you are, you know? Every human being wants to live their lives in dignity, and they also want to have a sense that they are in charge of where they are going with their lives. But if you don't have anything, you don't have an opportunity, you just lead a dreary life of despair, how are you going to dream big? You won't dream much. What happens to you? What happens to those who come after you? You know, and for some of us, my generation, I'm sure many people will agree with this, we always had the feeling that you want to be an improvement and on Absolutely. What your parents were all about, yes. an improvement on behalf of your family and to improve their lives as well. But you can only do so when you have the means, the wherewithal to make things happen. But if you are on the sidelines and you don't matter that much, it's very sad indeed for me. So that's what I care about a lot these days.
Legendary broadcaster Tim Modise, thank you. It's been a privilege and what a pleasure. Thank you for
Ali Mohammed, thanks very much for having the courage, the pluck to call me and be your guest this evening. I appreciate it and enjoyed myself with you here in the studio.
Kali Boham. Appreciate it.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.